I'm John.
And I'm Ash.
And this is your childhood trauma. Tonight we're going to be discussing a few episodes of Buffy, like always. These episodes happen to be the last episodes of season one. It will be Nightmares, Out of Mind, Out of Sight, and of course the truly great, first maybe great episode in my opinion of Buffy, Prophecy Girl. We'll be talking at length about these. Ash, as a new feature to the show, has some trivia she'll be throwing at you to the end. So wait, stick around, listen to that, listen for that. She has a lot of Buffy trivia, a lot more than me, and I usually learn something from listening to it, so it'll be interesting to see what she has for us. Let's go ahead and talk about Nightmares. I guess the first thing we should talk about with Nightmares is how it's structured. Like, does it make sense to you that nightmares become real, but they can become fake again? Like, Buffy becomes a vampire, but then she's not a vampire because she killed some dude who wasn't real in the first place. Like, does it all function? Like, is what I'm asking.
I guess it makes sense in the sense that
In the sense that Buffy makes sometimes.
I mean, keep in mind this is still just the first season, but I think it makes sense. You know, Nightmares come up. I felt that the story was playing doing a play on Nightmare on Elm Street. You know, Nightmares coming. You know, being
It probably
real.
was. And, like, I haven't seen Nightmare on Elm Street in so long. I didn't even think about that when I was watching this week. I did think about how fucking terrified of spiders I am. So
Oh,
I
God.
hate the opening scene. Like, to be honest to God, it's the scariest thing Buffy offered. It's worse than The Gentlemen, full stop. The scariest thing ever on Buffy are those goddamn spiders.
The spiders. I was watching it earlier. I was like, I knew the scene was coming, and I know I'm terrified of spiders, but I forgot how, like, they were just crawling all over him. It was just, oh my gosh, I freaked out. I was like, this is terrible. Don't do this. I would have died immediately.
I would have had a heart attack, yeah. Do you find the anointed one scary at all?
Nope.
No, like that,
Not
like
at
I think the idea is that sometimes children can be creepy, but
Yeah.
he's the annoying one, basically.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's what people call him, the
Yeah.
annoying one, said the anointed one. He's like, if they played on the creepy child thing, it didn't work. That's how I feel. It's like it didn't work with, you know, being this creepy child. I think if it played on that more, it would have been better, but I don't know.
I
It's just
don't
like
know.
he
I
was just
think they
there.
tried to. It just didn't, I don't know if the kid was wrong for it or it just didn't work with how, with the master being as, like, out there as that character was. I don't know. Next to the spiders, I thought the second most terrifying thing was Cordy's nightmare. It was very poor Cordy. Her she just went to the salon, Ash. She was just at the salon.
Jeff went to the salon. But I'm a woman with natural curly hair. And I'm a black woman with natural curl, you know, with natural hair. So I understand. I went through some hair picks, some combs, like I've broken some shit trying to get my hair together. Yeah, I felt for her when I saw her. I was like, damn, like I feel you because it's not okay.
A couple of things I thought about while I was watching this. One was I really love Xander's attitude at the open. Like, I would normally be being sarcastic when I say I love anything about him, but I do. He was like, "We'll find you, slay, no bid." Like, oh yeah, way to go,
I was gonna say something about that. It's
Xander.
like, can you give him some credit on this? You know,
I'll give him
some
credit for, like,
credit.
having a good attitude for now. Like, it doesn't always. Xander is a moody teenager. He is attitudes and, Willow and Buffy are, they're still teenagers, but they're very mature for teenagers. Xander isn't always, and, like, we see that sometimes.
Yeah, I agree with that. But like, no, I told you, like, I think because It's, I think it's a lot of times it has to do with upbringing, and we, you know, they don't really touch on it here. Well, well, they did.
Yeah, they did. They all have terrible upbringings.
Yeah, his up. I feel like that his upbringing, you know,
his might have been the worst. I don't know, but I mean, Willow's mother is a, you know, nutcase. We know that, and Buffy's mother is Joyce, and and Buffy has a terrible father. All right, let's just get into that. We this episode introduces us to Buffy's terrible, terrible father, and he was terrible and horrible and
I won't give Hank shit this episode.
Well,
because
then it was the nightmare where he was horrible. I mean, he was in real life. He was fine. But even though it was obviously a nightmare as it was happening, it was obvious, but to the viewer, but Sarah Michelle Gellar was great at making it connect at least a little, because, and this will come back up a lot in Prophecy Girl, she's really good at like letting you see heartbreak all over her face. She was really good at it earlier in the season when, when the science teacher died that she liked, and she's even better at it later in the season. And, like, it's probably the one thing she does best. She's a really good crier.
Yeah. I think I heard, like, I'm not sure if it was a reunion panel or whatever. I think it was something to go with Josh is right next to her. It's like, when, I guess Josh was like, when Buffy cries, he's satisfied or something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, that's terrible. But, like, it's a Josh Wayne thing to think, you know, like, but also Michelle Gellar was so good at it, so it was that scene. Me personally, I connected to that really well because my parents are still together, but I connect, you know, I kind of somewhat been on the, you know, receiving end of that, you know, conversation, you know, like, oh, you like ruined, you know, your parents are, you know, and that's like a child's worst, you know, not worst nightmare, but it's like, it's a definite nightmare that I can definitely relate to.
Yeah. I mean, to an extent, probably me too. Like, I'm a child of divorce. I don't know that.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean, we all are. Like, we're pretty much. Like, most parents get divorced or never got married. I mean, most people are at this point. I don't know. I feel like I know a lot more people who are than aren't. But, I thought Giles not being able to read was sort of funny, because at that point he's just like furniture. Like, well, if Giles can't read, he has no purpose. He is of no functional use at all.
And I was thinking about that. I was like, why didn't they give him, you know, him lacking knowledge? And I thought about you. It's like, because you feel that, you know, especially in this season, that Giles doesn't, you know, come forth with, like, knowing stuff.
not very often.
You know?
Like, I love Buffy's line, like, oh, am I knowledge girl now?
I was thinking about, I think if they went with that, it would have been more effective if Giles was the note. He was on point with all the things that he said to this point, so his lack of knowledge would have been more effective.
It would have been more effective, but it was just like business as usual, pretty much. there are times in season one, rare, but times where Giles knows something, but usually he's just like, let me look in the books. If I look in the books, maybe
I'll figure it out this episode.
Any thoughts on Buffy as a vampire, or, like, that's, you know, obviously one of the notable things about nightmares is we see Buffy the vampire.
That whole sequence is actually my favorite, scene of the episode was, Giles, because I love that Giles and Buffy's, nightmares intertwined with each other, you know, Buffy, you know, being buried alive, and Giles, you know, it gave a perspective and gave more depth to Giles, you know, finding out, you know, his slayer is dead. And it ties into, you know, the next couple episodes. And her coming as a vampire. And I love how all those, you know, those nightmares, like, all intertwined into each other. I thought it was brilliant to do.
Yeah, I think it was really neat. I mean, this episode isn't by any means a standard bearer for Buffy. It's not structurally, I mean, it's sort of flawed, as I hinted at my thoughts on it when I was asking about it. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense if you break it down and analyze, wait, how is this possible? But, I mean, there's a scene also that speaks to this point about just like how nonsensical some things are in this episode. What is poor Laura thinking? All right, she's attacked by some big freak in the high school's basement. And don't get me started on why students get to go in and out of the basement, the high school. But she's attacked by some freak. Who know who shows up to help Ash? Is it the cops? Is it the principal? Or is it the librarian and the new girl?
He showed up with a plant, so
They tell her, and I quote, "You can understand why we are anxious to see this doesn't happen again." And I'm like, what? No, I can't. You're the librarian. What are you
was so weird. It
saying?
was like, okay.
Like,
Sure.
if you got attacked at school and like your school librarian showed up asking you questions about it, wouldn't you be like, "This is kind of weird"?
I guess that's how this town rolls. But clearly, everyone's always shocked that the librarian just shows up. It's
The
helpful.
teachers really
It's such a
care.
weird thing. Like,
And
oh, man.
Buffy, you know, I mean, if you don't know Buffy's the Slayer, you're like, why are you here? We're not even
Yeah,
friends. You don't even go here.
yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. They clearly could not say Little League in this episode because they kept saying Kitty League, which is not a thing to my knowledge. It was just obviously Little League, but apparently they didn't have the
Yeah.
rights to say Little League. So.
I love how I love how they did that storyline. It was because it's really true to life that people yeah, especially adults put so much pressure on the kids, especially as something so minor as a sometimes Little League. It was like you put that much pressure
You
on a
mean
kid,
Kitty League?
and yeah, and he made a mistake that well he missed
Yeah.
the ball, and like he got jumped, but he got attacked by his coach for it, and like Xander said, he's like, you clearly don't know Little League because I'm surprised it wasn't one of the parents, because and people try so hard to live their life through the kids and take and like people do that with adults and like criticize and put so much shit on people. As adults, especially if you're in the public eye, and if you're it, like, especially with nowadays, I was thinking about how it reflects on nowadays that we have social media that we can just openly do that and like so openly, like on like Facebook, Twitter, like we can to the point we can directly pretty much talk shit to the people,
Yeah.
people we don't even know, and it's like.
Yeah.
It was painful.
Yeah, I mean, if you take this, I mean, it's hard for me to take this episode seriously. But if you take this episode seriously, it is obviously sad, state where we're at, and because it's a much more realistic storyline in the fact of
Yeah.
at the heart of it than most Buffy storylines. Most Buffy storylines in season one especially are like these
Yeah.
bit are metaphors for like real life things, but this is more of a straightforward real life thing like child abuse. Okay, it's pretty
Yeah.
sad. My favorite scene was also like Buffy vampire fight. One because it's a cool effect, but it also shows Buffy has like an intuitive sense how to solve problems. She doesn't need to consort a book. She really doesn't even need a watcher. She's really good at slaying. She can just figure shit out as it occurs. She's like, "Oh, I know what I need to do now." Like it just, I can just, it just dawns on her. And it's made very obvious all throughout the first season that she's not just special because she's the Slayer. She is a special Slayer. She is really, really good at
Yeah.
this thing. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I tried to give Xander some credit that
He punched the clown.
well, that too. Well, he faced his fear.
Yeah.
But also
Oh,
when
well, what was up with that dude picking up foods laying on the floor? Like, does that mean is the boy that hungry? Does he not eat? What the fuck is the matter with him?
I think it was supposed to tie into his childhood trauma. No pun intended. Based on the with his childhood trauma, like his sixth birthday, like when he picked up the last candy bar, be like, oh, I haven't had one of these since my, you know, my sixth birthday. And that's when the Nazi clown came in the, came out and attacked him. But what I was referring to is when Buffy was trying to bring Billy to, you know, face his fear, and Willow and Giles didn't understand what she was doing, and Sam was like, I get it. He was like, I get what she's doing, because he himself has, you know, did that, you know, face his fear, his childhood fear.
Mm-hmm.
So I gotta give him some credit on that.
You're giving him more credit than I would, but okay. Out of Mind, Out of Sight is an episode I like more than Nightmares. I thought, it, I mean, it's for season one, it's after Prophecy Girl. I'd throw it in there with The Pack and Angel as like better episodes. I thought there were several reasons this episode was significant, from like least important to most important. There are all these supernatural, like the supernatural books of foreboding and MacGuffin, blah, 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 MacGuffin. They're like important plot points. Anyway, Harmony reappears. Hey, Harm. I love Harmony. And she shows up. The season's motif of Buffy feeling like she's missing out on something is really batted around again in the, before the finale. Cordy works with the Buffy gang, for the Scooby gang, for the first time. Angel works with Giles for the first time. And maybe most importantly, because like an entire season was based around it, the U.S. government is shown to have knowledge of like supernatural things. So that actually becomes really important. What do you think of Out of Mind, Out of Sight as an episode?
I really liked it. One thing you can love about season one is that it definitely touches on realistic situations, but put a supernatural twist to it. It happens throughout the series, of course, but season one definitely, like, each episode, it definitely does that. So I enjoyed it because, you know, this girl who's literally ignored, you know, she's invisible, and just to everyone else, she literally becomes invisible, and it made me think of, you know, the crime, you know, at schools, you know, crimes at schools, you know, these kids, you know, attack,
right,
you know, revenge. That's what it felt like.
I mean, this is sort of before all of, like, the mass shootings that have occurred at schools.
Yeah.
I mean, not before they ever started, but before they were so common.
There's something before Columbine.
There is something to that. I think there is, like, a... I mean, obvious. The metaphor here is so obvious that I hate to even explain it, but, I mean, it's explained within the episode. She feels invisible because nobody sees her, blah, blah, blah. But she turns to violence because of being, you know, so unloved and unpopular.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is a direct correlation to Columbine or any of the other recent shootings. Let me ask you this as, like, a real question. At this point, would you have watched a spinoff show about Cordelia?
I feel that if Cordelia, at this point, was the main character, I don't know if it would necessarily work.
I mean, it would have to be a comedy. I mean, there's no way it could be
anything else.
It definitely
has to be a comedy.
It would have to be like a dark comedy, because, I mean, the reason it's so funny is because it's like some of the things she says. One of the things I love about Cordelia is how she just does not seem to have any thought for the feelings of those around her as she speaks. Like, it's just so, her self-obsession is so sincere. It's lovely.
Sorry. Like, when she was taught with the teacher and, like, her perspective on it. And
I love her Shakespeare interpretation. Like, Shylock should just get over himself, because nobody thinks about it's not the victim's pain that's really important. It's the pain of the,
it was like,
the person
oh
who committed
God.
The action. Yeah.
Yeah.
Her campaigning was
I
great, though. She was like, I'm not going to court the loony fringe vote. I just want to go on record as saying I wish some of our presidential candidates were less interested in the loony fringe vote.
Cordelia. I really do love the Kathy Cordelia.
Cordy for president. That's all I'm saying. Cordy for president. I have a
Oh,
serious
God.
question, though, Ash. Do you think I'm never lonely because I'm so cute and popular?
I'd say that was my favorite scene of the episode, though.
Right, so
That scene.
you gave Giles a lot. I mean, not Giles, you gave Xander a lot of dap, lot of credit last episode. Defend your boy because he has a problem with his small part to help save the world. He is complaining about having to help with research.
aren't you like an English teacher? I'm sure you love books.
Okay,
That's
but
all I'm
he
saying.
has a
Everyone.
problem doing some research while Buffy has to fight demons? Really?
It's exhausting. Especially if you don't know exactly what you're looking for. It's a million books. That's all I'm saying. It's a million books.
That's a terrible defense. You
There's a lot of books. It's like, oh my God, like I gotta look through like a million
By the way,
like.
Xander does say something significant, whether it's, I mean, it's not good or bad, it's just significant because it shows the show changing its mind. He says, this is a big school at one point, like when he's like
Yeah.
saying why they don't, like you just told us earlier this season it was a tiny school, now it's a big school.
Yeah, I was like, big school. I was like, no. Like, this is supposed to be like a small town. It's not
Was, but
supposed
now it's a
to
big
be
school.
even. Yeah, I was like, don't switch it up on this. This is a small town. Like, no. People die every day in this town. No.
Can we talk for real, though? I was kidding about the question earlier. Can we talk about the quote, feeling deep down, end quote, that Buffy and Cordy have for each other? She busts up in that room and she says, despite your weirdness and loser friends, deep down, I know we both have this feeling. And then she gets cut off. What feeling do they both have, Ash? What feeling?
Oh, I don't even know what it was.
That's a spin-off show I would watch all day. I'm pretty sure there are some fanfic sites devoted to it.
I'm pretty sure there is.
Man.
I will probably send you one. I'm pretty sure I can find one and send it to you.
The way she just casually insults everybody in the room, even as she asks for help, though, is
Yeah.
second best thing about Cordelia. The best thing about Cordelia is how immediately she accepts things. Like, there's an invisible girl attacking me. Okay. All right, help me. Yeah, do something about
Like, hey, Buffy, help me. And like, I know you're always around when
I
this shit
think you
happens.
might be in a gang, okay?
It's like you would have asked the possible gang member to save you because she goes around when crazy shit happens. It's like, what?
Oh, Cordy is so good in this episode. This is the Cordy episode, but and that feeling deep down that she and Buffy have or something, I just can't stop. My favorite scene was, oh, it could have been the closing because I just love the Beatles allusion to the happiness is a warm gun lyrics that are on the last page. But I guess it's probably Cordy's like actual first scene is like a character with real depth where she's like,
Yeah.
yeah, it beats be like, why do you try to have people around you if you're all alone, whatever, and it beats being
Yeah.
alone all by yourself. I mean, there's some depth of
Yeah.
character who's eventually going to become like an integral main character on a show in the Buffyverse and even on Buffy to some degree. So like it's important that she not just be completely shallow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
I'm glad we
definitely
saw Principal Snyder and glad Clea DuVall was on the show for like one episode.
Oh, gosh.
I have a question for you about the nature of something on Buffy. Can invisible people see each other? Because they all acted like in that classroom, all the invisible kids acted like they could see each other. Or talk, they were like, say hey to this person who's walking in now, as you can see. Can the teacher see the invisible people? Because otherwise teaching that class would be so fucking hard. You can't see any of the students.
I hadn't thought about that. I don't know. Because I know it is an invisible thing in season 6. And I'm trying to think if they could actually see each other. And I don't think they could have.
Are they just like John Cena? Like, you can't see.
Oh, God. Don't say that. No.
Ash, do you support our troops? That's an inside joke. I apologize to our audience. If you know anything about wrestling, or even if you don't, Google John Cena phone prank. It's pretty funny. Back to Buffy though. Any more thoughts about Out of Mind, Out of Sight?
I found it interesting. Like, I just love the depth of how alone this girl was, like when they showed the yearbook and have a good.
At least a lot of people told her to have a nice summer. It was very nice.
Oh my gosh, not in the sad because I used to do that to people, but I did it to like almost just about everybody. Like last time yearbook, have a nice summer. Like it came to the point like it was an abbreviation. You just do the abbreviation of it.
Yeah.
Like you didn't even, like write the whole thing out, but yeah, and like to the point that Xander and Willow, who are the outcasts, you know, losers of the school, don't even know who this girl is. So it shows how low on the how low this character, this person was to the rest of the school.
Yeah,
and I like that how they did that.
And Xander was terrible in Out of Mind, Out of Sight. He was a terrible excuse for a person. He was alternated between being terrible and being useful, even though I need to ask you about... Let's just get to it right away. The biggest problem with a great episode, Prophecy Girl, best episode of the first season, would you agree?
I feel that his
wait. What I asked was, do you agree that this was the best episode of the first season?
Yeah.
Okay. So something I need to ask you about before we get to Xander's behavior or any of the actual more important stuff. Why can Angel not breathe? He tells Xander that Xander has to do the CPR because he can't breathe. But first of all, we hear Angel being out of breath at times. Secondly, even worse, we see him smoking. How the hell can you smoke if you can't breathe?
Yeah.
It's some really poor consistency.
I thought about it too, first of all, think about the actor David Boreanaz in the first season. He pants a lot. He breathes a lot. It's like you're a vampire.
Then, I'd like the most important scene he's in. He's like, oh, I have no breath. He's like, wait, what?
I have no breath. But he's like, I have no breath. Yeah. Like, I hear your breath going. Hey, dude. Like, you can pump some air into the throat real quick.
Okay, so I guess the most... I guess I want to start with talking about how well this episode sets up for what's coming. I think it's easily the best episode of season 1 because it's a glimpse of the show's potential, especially in its build-up. The first half of the show does an amazing job of building tension and making you care about the second half. Even if the actual showdowns or fights, they get a lot better. I don't know if the setup really gets much better. The little touches... Like, everyone liking Buffy's dress. Those seem to add, like, extra layers of meaning once you have that set up instead of just being, like, little jokey remarks for comedic relief. I don't know. Alright, I guess we're gonna... Let's talk about Xander, and then let's talk about Buffy and the great, great scene in the library that defines the episode. Alright, so Xander starts off the episode practicing his speeches and moves on Willow. Like, does he not realize that's pretty much cruel and unusual?
I don't think he realizes that.
Well, you say that, but then when he asks Willow to go to the dance with him, he's shocked when she says no. Like, is he shocked because he actually doesn't know she likes him? Or is he shocked because he knows she likes him and is shocked she would not say yes?
I think it's the fact that Willow doesn't say no to him a lot.
Yeah.
I think that's what the shockness was. It's like, this was Willow's moment of standing up for herself, not to play, you know, second best towards Xander's feelings towards Buffy. So she was like, that was like her way of putting a stop to it. Not even though it does come back up later, you know, in season two, but it was like her way of like, no, I'm not just going to be, you know, in this. I mean, I think he does know, but like I said before, I think his mind like ignores it because
he cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
Maybe. As a Xander apologist, I'll accept. I'll accept that because ultimately... Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
I treat all these characters the same, okay?
You value them the same. You don't treat them the same. Because if you applied the same standard to them, you would realize some are much more valuable to world saving than others.
I treat them all the same. I treat all the characters the same. So I'm...
Well, I can't wait until we get to season 2, episode 1, because in it, Xander says and does some unforgivable shit that you're gonna have to fit. You're gonna have to. Yes, he tells Buffy, quote, "I'm going to kill you if this blah blah blah." We'll get to it. Like, it's terrible. He's terrible.
I can't blame him for that. Not really.
I can absolutely 100% blame him for that. And I will. Well, but that's next week. We don't need to debate it yet. We're good. Look forward to that. Tune in to hear us argue about Xander next week. I think Ash just has a crush on him. I don't know what's going on. Let us know. Comment, guys. If you're listening to this, comment. Tell us your opinion on this. I think one day we're just going to have an episode where we present facts and, like, argue it like a case. Like, is Xander worthwhile?
I never said that. He has flaws. But I think all the characters have flaws. Like, major flaws.
Well, I mean, the question is, does his flaws supersede his good parts? Where I think the other characters, the answer is, of course not. With Xander, it's very debatable.
But you put the useless. You feel that because he's useless, that his flaws is more.
Yeah, because you bring less to the table. There, you can't take shit off the table. Like, if you are bringing me a chicken sandwich and fries, and if you get there, you take the pepper off the table. Okay, whatever. But if you just sit down and you grab the pepper, I'll be like, what the hell are you doing at my table?
He tries, though. It's not like he doesn't try, though. He does try. He doesn't necessarily sit around. He does try and try to put... But because he's just some normal guy, he doesn't bring as much to the table as everyone else, in a sense.
Even Willow, at this point, I don't have a... You know, it's funny, because at this point, Willow is not very... I mean, she's a little helpful with her hacker stuff, but she's no real use. And... We're going to get to it in a minute, how in season 1, nobody's really of any help to Buffy, and that's a lot of what the scene in the library is about. But,
Willow's meant to be the vulnerable character.
Yeah,
in the
I mean, she is. She's, I mean, part of the season focuses on how she's really alone. And so, to an extent, in season 1, none of the characters are very helpful to Buffy, because in the end, you know, she has to be, she is the one. It doesn't say, the prophecy doesn't say, for each generation there is one and her friends. The prophecy says there is one. And,
yeah.
You know, one is singular. But anyway, we're going to talk more about Xander at length next week. We're going to really have to get into his blaming of Buffy for things, for blaming, you know, the girl who saved the world and now has post-traumatic stress disorder for a lapse in judgment.
Buffy apologist. Boom.
Okay, Buffy saved the world a lot. It says so
He could
on. It
still be a fucking
says.
bitch, though. Like, no matter how many times I said, look, my thing is, you're an asshole, you're a fucking asshole.
Okay,
That's
but
all
if
I'm
you're an
saying.
asshole who saved the world, I'm okay with it. If you're an
You saved
asshole
the
who's
world,
a
though, it
carpenter,
doesn't
you're a
excuse
fucking asshole. Like, I
you.
give
You're
people.
still an asshole. It doesn't excuse you being a
Of
bitch. That's
course it
all I'm
does. When you have the kind
saying.
of
No.
pressure that Buffy has on her, and we see in this episode, you can't imagine being under that amount of pressure. Like, of course,
You're still a
sometimes you're going to
bitch.
have a bad attitude. And like, and if you're a teenage girl who just died, of course you're going to have post-traumatic stress disorder. And if you have
But it's only
post-traumatic stress disorder, you might have some problems around that issue. Like, that's not.
Yeah, but it's only so much someone can take until it's like at least they can, get to
So much
get able
someone can
to it.
take.
No, that's next episode. That's next segment. I'm not even gonna get into it now.
We keep saying
Bye-bye.
that. All right, so let's get into this episode. This episode. This episode, it's about a lot, but it really can be boiled down to that one scene in the library. And that one scene in the library, Buffy's laughter at the beginning of it, like the absurdity of what's happening, with Angel
Oh,
showing
God.
up to talk to Giles about how Buffy's going to die and how the prophecies say so. And Buffy just laughs, and it's
Yeah.
laughing at the absurdity of all of this, and it's a deep, sarcastic laugh, but it signals the ridiculousness of the situation. And she
Yeah.
start, she starts throwing books at Giles, and she's saying,
Oh,
"Read me the signs, show me my fortune. You're so much help sitting here with your books." And it's heartbreaking to see Buffy like that. But it's also actually nice to see, to me, to see her finally call out Giles. Like, what good are you?
I felt so bad for Giles in that scene. I felt
Oh
so
yeah,
bad
because
for him,
Giles
but
actually realizes in that scene, like, I need
that
to
he
be
is,
more. Like, I need to, like, I'm not adequately helping her. And you can see
yeah,
in that,
it's.
later on that he wants to. Like, to Giles' credit, he's gonna go try to take on the master for somehow.
Yeah, this is the episode that pushed Giles to be more, for the rest of the season. But like starting season two, like
Yeah, I would agree with that.
he's
I think that was a turning point
this
for the
was,
character of
yeah, this
Giles.
is he's not yeah. This is what turns him from not just being, a watcher, like with nightmares. His nightmare
Where
was
watchers watch. That's
with nightmares, his nightmare was Buffy dying. And him feeling like he didn't do as much as he could have
Yeah.
to
It's
keep the
coming
kid
real. Like,
alive.
this is his
Yeah,
nightmare because
like.
there's nothing he can't. I mean, and in his defense, even if he was more knowledgeable, even if he was a better fighter than he is now, like, there's still not very much in this situation he could do.
Yeah,
The
but his
person who
time.
could be doing something that you kind of have to blame for not is, if you take the full show into its context, Angel could be very helpful about now.
Yeah.
But he's just gonna, like, hide from
That's
the master.
stupid. He's
I don't care. I don't care, Giles. I don't care. I'm 16 years old. I don't want to die. It's still the saddest moment probably ever in Buffy. It's close anyway. At least, that doesn't involve an actual death. It's made
Yeah.
possible. All of this is made possible and is so good because of Sarah Michelle Gellar's performance in this
Yeah.
episode, and it's great. It's really, as a standalone performance, it's really, really great. And we think of Buffy as someone more than a girl. I know I do, especially
Yeah.
because, but even and especially even because she can't be a normal girl, and that's emphasized. She's not a normal girl. She's a Slayer. She can't have a normal
Yeah.
life. But she is still a girl, a young one, a lovable one,
Yeah.
a really cool one, and she just doesn't want to
Yeah,
As
well, maybe
people don't, generally speaking.
what made that scene so great is it touched on like throughout the series itself is that's Buffy's thing. That's one of her things. Like she just wants to be normal. But the thing is, it this scene show that, like, throughout the season, it shows that she just wants to take on normal things. Like, she wanted to, you know, go out for cheerleading and do, you know, go on dates and do just do normal teenage girl stuff. But it was like, you know, we're like, okay, she should be able to have that. But it was this scene we realized the severity of what being a slayer is. It, like, it really hit us. And so it was she has this, like, this girl is going to die. It was like, it's no way around it. But,
well, she found a way around it, and you know, sort of ironically, there was a way around it, and she figured it out. But because, you know, fulfilling prophecy, and, you know, because she talked to Willow and started feeling like a sense of guilt and a sense of, like, duty, she had to do what she was told, you know, she has to do. She doesn't do her way around it, which actually would have just avoided the whole problem altogether.
Yeah, you just didn't show up. Well, I was standing in shape today, though. But anyways.
Oh, yeah, his breath, real. because Angel something. Doesn't. I mean, here's what that touches on to me, that scene, is that we need to make Xander useful, and we need to show why Angel and Buffy, what's wrong with Angel and Buffy. And what's wrong with Angel and Buffy is that Angel isn't a human. He doesn't have the necessary life to give to Buffy that a human has. And
he can't literally breathe life into her.
Yeah. But Xander can, and, you know, as badly as he takes the Buffy thing, you know, this season was built all around coming to Buffy versus the Master. But, like, the B storyline really was about Xander loves Buffy, and he's going to ask her out, and it's going to happen. And we all knew that he was going to do it, and we all knew he was eventually going to get, like, let down.
It was
coming. So how did this pay off for you, first of all? Like, was it effective for you? Did you feel badly for Xander?
The asking out scene?
Yeah, yeah. You either
I
feel a thing or you don't.
I like the way it went about, because it showed that just because, you know, it gives off that nice guy trope. Like, a lot of people say Xander is supposed to be the nice guy who really isn't a nice guy. And I have to say, I agree with that. I think I think he wants to be a nice guy, but I think there's a lot of issues with Xander himself. But it shows that just because people know the whole nice guys finish last thing, and people feel like just because you're a nice guy, you deserve that right to get the girl. And that's not necessarily the case. So this is this guy
he's been nice to Buffy. He's not always nice in season one, but up until she actually rejects him, he's always nice to Buffy.
He's a teenager. Anyway, he's you know, he's been there. He's done, you know, been there and just been around.
Yeah, I don't know if he's done that. I don't know if he's done much Well, as the episode where the bug lady got him showed, he hasn't done much. Well, then. He has a lack of experience.
In the sense that he's been there to.
Oh, he's had rejection before, according
to
him.
Group,
oh, okay. Okay, that's what you meant. I wasn't sure what you meant when he'd been there, done that.
He hasn't been there.
Or done that.
That's season 3. But anyway,
I think Cordy would have had a better chance of asking Buffy out, and that would have been a much more interesting scene. I would have loved that scene.
That would have been so weird. Oh my gosh, that would have been one of the
weirdest. It would have been groundbreaking. It would have been ahead of its time.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely.
They had a feeling deep down, Ash. Deep down, they both had it. Never forget.
No, I'm gonna find some fix for you. Some fix for you. some Buffy and Cordy fanfic for you. But yeah, the thing, well, what I loved about that scene is that it was very realistic, and it showed that it was very a teenage situation. Well, not even necessarily a teenage, it's a real life situation, like getting rejected, and then he came off very asshole-ish, and he knew that he was being an asshole about it. But that was just,
well,
that was
Buffy hurt him, and he wanted to somehow hurt her back, yeah. Even though he really couldn't. Like, it didn't hurt Buffy.
And that's the thing that
he's just hurting himself
people,
more.
Yeah, and that's the thing that a lot of people do. But what I loved about it that
yeah,
he wasn't
a shitty thing to do. Because a lot
he
of people
wasn't petty
do
about it.
He was. He was super petty about it. He went to home and listened to country music. The music of pain.
Wow, what a country music thing. Don't get me wrong.
That was by far the funniest line of the episode. I mean.
Yeah. The music of pain. It is true. Yeah, I'm not dabbling in
country now. Is it? I don't listen to country enough to know. I'll have to take your word for it.
I don't either, yeah. But it was... What I loved about it was very. I felt the scene was very realistic. It was the way it went down, and I loved that just because Xander was, he came out as like this nice guy, she didn't feel the need to cast to Dane because he was a nice guy. Like,
no.
Although there is one cast that she does end up sort of dating in season 4 that looks like Xander. Said the personality is slightly different. He's
wait,
less goofy.
Looks
like
Xander?
Like,
I don't think they look alike at all. Riley?
Parker.
Oh,
no, Parker.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that, I guess. So.
We'll,
I was thinking, you said season 4. I was thinking Riley. And I was like, they don't really look alike to me. What are you saying? All white people look alike? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, all white people look alike, John. No, but look at Parker. Like, tell me that dude don't look like Xander.
I'll have to look more closely. I don't really remember how Parker looks that much.
Clearly, I don't think it was the flip. I think it was just the relationship they had. I think if he came out,
wasn't Parker gay? Didn't that come out later?
No, that was Scott.
Season 3.
Okay. Yeah, season 3 boyfriend. But it was. I don't think it was the. I think it was just more, Buffy and at that point she wanted a boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, she wanted friends more, so she doesn't have many friends.
Right.
So that friendship was,
it was valuable to her, that's how she responded. Buffy ultimately, as Xander put it, do you feel a thing or you not? I mean, that's Joss Whedon's words coming out of Xander's mouth very clearly.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like the sort of insight Xander usually has, but he has it for this scene, and... It's true. I mean, that's what you decide. You don't decide whether you're going to date somebody because you're friends or not. You decide it because you feel a thing or you don't. And she doesn't.
Yeah.
And that's why she doesn't. And Xander, in my opinion, does act pettily, but to his credit, and this is his, this is the best episode, quite frankly, to be a Xander apologist in, because he actually does something that saves Buffy's life. This is maybe the only time I can ever remember him doing that. He saves Buffy's life. And technically, let's talk about 1 second before we get to the closing and wrap it up. Let's talk about Buffy's death. I've always struggled with this. She was, medically dead, perhaps, for a few seconds.
Yeah.
Does the Slayer gene trigger on medically dead? Don't you have, doesn't it a spiritual thing that goes from one person to another in the Slayer lore?
I think it transfers, but I think it still lingers.
But it transferred, but it didn't transfer because Buffy still has all of it and then some when she gets up. It didn't go anywhere. She still got it.
Well, I think it was the Slayer. I guess when she was revived, the Slayer, because it already transfers at this point. But I think with her, I think it's reawakened in a sense. Because the Slayer, was dead, but it's still within her. So the fact that she was, revived, it reawakens. That's my thoughts on it.
Okay. A couple thoughts I had, loose ends. I loved how Cordy didn't seem nearly as scared as she should have been toward the end. She was just a bad bitch driving that car over vampires and shit. I thought the vampires sort of acted like zombies in this episode for some reason. Other than, like,
yeah, that was weird.
It was weird.
Like Walking Dead and shit. Yeah. It was like, what the hell is going on?
Okay, here's one thing, one other thing we haven't gotten to that I want to discuss before we get off wrap up and you drop your knowledge on us. Hellmouth, to me, works when it's an idea that there is a place of mystical convergence, and all this mystical energy goes to this place, and that's why all these demons and idea and, like, spirits and poltergeists and all this shit ends up in Sunnydale because of the place of mystical convergence. I don't like the Hellmouth idea nearly as much when it's a physical thing with, like, monsters popping up out of the ground. Like, that doesn't... What do you think? What are your thoughts on that? That doesn't work for me the same way.
Yeah, it's different. yeah, the whole fog out of the gut, it was...
And that comes up again and again over the next couple of seasons. We'll see the Hellmouth open at times.
I mean, I don't think it's that. It's just... different. I'm just gonna say different.
Okay, well, I'm gonna go ahead and say I didn't, as much as I like this episode, possible like top 10 Buffy episode for me, definitely top 20, possibly top 10. I don't like that this signals like a shift in what the Hellmouth is. The Hellmouth isn't this mystical convergence. It is literally a mouth of hell, and monsters are literally beneath you, and it's just, I don't know. I wasn't crazy about the weird monsters.
It doesn't really bother me. It's more of, because like you said, it's the mouth of hell, so it's like...
Well, I mean, it's literally, it's no longer a thing, a place of mystical convergence and more of an idea. It's a literal mouth of hell now. I love the ending. I love the way the Scooby Gang was finally like all united with Cordelia and Angel there as well. I mean, it's a great episode. Any more thoughts on the episode before you get to trivia? You want to tell me about how great Xander is anymore?
I never said Xander was great, okay? Don't put words in my mouth. But no.
Even the Xander apologist doesn't want to say he's great, so that's good. Ash, I'm 50% playing with you. Like, I only half mean when I teach you about Xander. Anyway, where do you rank this in Buffy? Where do you rank Prophecy Girl in Buffy?
I'm sorry, what?
Where do you rank Prophecy Girl in Buffy? I mean, what is this a great episode for you? Is it just happen to be the best of the first season? Where does it land?
It was definitely my favorite of the first season. I'll say it's probably in the top. Maybe top 10, top 20, like you said. Probably top 50 at most. But it's definitely a great episode, especially for the character of Buffy. And it definitely touched on every major character.
Yeah, I mean, it almost makes going through season one again worth it. It's hard to do that because it was rough and early on. It was some rough going when we were... Yeah. Never Kill a Boy on the First Date, and Teacher's Pet, and so on. We got through it, and we're here, and next week we're going to talk about the first few episodes of Season 2, which include the one about, She's Been Bad, or When She Was Bad, which is where we get so much of our energetic discussion from, and the... I think unanimously winning episode School Hard, where we meet Spike. Yeah. All right, hit us with that trivia.
Trivia. Okay, let me pull it. The episode. Out of Sight, Out of Mind, Out of Sight is the first episode, Angel Meets Giles.
Mm-hmm.
And the Codex is actually referenced in season 4 of Angel, or the episode Orpheus.
Huh.
Yeah. Oh, Angel's breath.
Yeah.
Use of breath. And the supposedly lack of is like, I'm not even gonna.
It's really hard to. I mean, this is what we do when we talk about the show. I'm somebody who tries to poke holes in things when we're analyzing things, and you're somebody who tries to cover those holes. So I'm like, why does this happen? This doesn't make sense. And you're always looking for explanations. And like, I love that even you are just like, yeah, I don't know. That's terrible.
In Nightmares, there's a line about, I think Xander Willows says that it's, how the nightmares are actually mention that they're dreams, and Giles says was pretty much saying that if there was dreams, then there should be a musical comedy version of this, which those who watch Buffy knows that there is a musical comedy version of musical episode in season 6. So it's kind of like foreshadowed that, which actually that episode actually referenced the episode Nightmares in that episode.
I forgot about that scene in Nightmares. We didn't mention it at all, where Willow, there's a scene that comes up several times again in Buffy where Willow has stage fright and she can't perform. By the way, the Aldo, I don't know who that dude was in the scene, but I thought he was funny. Just like his facial reactions to Willow's character and all, like, come on.
Hello, you're your turn.
He looks so pissed off too when she like stumbled out on stage and bumped into him. He's like, what's wrong with this girl?
Actually, Willow Space Fright does get brought up 2 times throughout the series. There's another episode where smoking is bad, considered bad, when the girl gets killed by the demon, Lucky 19 demon thing. There's a sign that's like, smoking kills or something like that. So it's throughout the series, you know, certain characters smoke. You know, so it's like a sign of evilness, as well as alcohol.
Well, vampires tend to. I mean, that tends to be, I think, in like especially this time, something you start to see a lot is like people on TV still smoked, but it was always the bad guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even the bad guys, or something bad is going to happen to them.
Yeah. So don't smoke, kids.
Yeah, smoking's bad. There's many characters with the name William Variant in Nightmares. The character Billy, which is a nickname for William, and those who watch Buffy, that Spike's real name is
William the Bloody.
Yes. Angel's name is William, which is a variant of William. Mm-hmm. And there's a few other characters throughout the series. And you got Willow, whose nickname is Will. Yeah, Willie the Snitch.
Willie the Snitch. Let's just be glad that Willie the Snitch never did a crossover on Empire.
Oh, gosh. He would be terrified. He would die immediately. Please, let's not have that. He was like, nope.
If you had the Snitch on him, he just learned that he's Willie the Snitch and it's lights out for him.
I think it's episode Nightmares. I think Willow has a Nerf herder poster in her locker.
Oh, really? I didn't notice that. That's cool.
Yeah, it's the band who does the theme for Buffy, and Nerf herder is also a term from Star Wars. But she also has a picture in her locker of her and Giles, apparently.
Nobody thinks that's weird that the girl has a picture of her in the
library. Yeah. And it just brought up in season 4 that she did have a crush on Giles. during this time.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, she's still into guys, or thinks she is at this point, and, like,
yeah.
she's around Giles all the time, and she's nerdy and into books, and he has lots of books, I guess.
Yeah, she definitely had a crush on Giles. She brings it up in season 4. Oh, well, not the picture, but her. She does have a crush on Giles.
Yeah.
Buffy's father is in... how many episodes?
Not many. He's in a couple more.
Yeah. I think he's maybe in 4 episodes in Buffy altogether.
Yeah, he's pretty absent, and very absent after tragic things happened to Buffy. We won't get into talk about it. But he basically doesn't show up at all after Buffy, when Buffy needs help.
This is, I think, the first episode when Giles gets knocked out.
That happens. It happens a lot.
That's a recurring thing. He just knocked out.
He's got a weak chin. Like, there's nothing he can do about that, I guess.
And I think first episode, Buffy punches Giles. I think she does it twice in the series.
Should have done it more. That's all I'm gonna say.
Oh, God. Really?
Like, he needed it sometimes. Like, sometimes he just needed to be smacked around a little.
Yeah, I think all of them do.
Well, most of them are. I guess they usually are, just not by each other. Eventually, they all do more fighting, so everybody gets hit a good bit. Well, particularly in the next couple of seasons, Xander gets beat up a lot. So. Well, he does. It's like, there's always fighting, and he's always there's a whole storyline about how they're worried about him at one point, and they want him to stop fighting because he keeps getting hurt.
There's also a lot of Nazi references throughout the series. Nightmares. I don't think that's the first Nazi reference, but there is Nazi references throughout the series. I'm trying to think. Oh, also, Sarah Michelle Gellar does really have a phobia of being buried alive.
Yeah, I'd read that before, so I'm sure she loved doing that scene.
Yeah, and there's also a scene in the later seasons where she was buried, she was on the ground, I guess you say, and she did not handle that. It was very, I guess you could say, stressful for her to have to go through that.
I imagine it was. So in a way, she didn't have to act that much about being afraid of being buried.
Yeah, like you can't blame her for like being terrified of something.
No,
like
that. I hope they got an actor who was not terrified of spiders to do the spider bit.
Oh gosh, I'm sorry.
I would like to be on TV, yes, but no, I would not like to do that. No, thank you.
Yeah, I don't like no. Also, the master is older. I think he's 600 years old, and he's older than Dracula, I believe.
He is as old as any on record.
Yeah. So that's it. I'm gonna do better next time.
All right, it was good. Some things I definitely did not know. Please comment, like, subscribe, share. Check out our other pod. We appreciate. We appreciate you listening, first of all, and anything else you do is extra, and we would appreciate that too. Let us know. Help us settle our debate that will be never ending, but try to help us settle it anyway. Tell Ash why she's wrong, or tell me if you think I am, which I'm not.
I'm not saying vandalism. You know what?
Ash, can you let it go? You get, like, personally offended about him. It's weird. I'm not insulting you. I'm insulting a fictional character. It's okay.
I'm just saying. I don't think he was a bad person. I just think he did stupid shit, which is what all the characters did.
Okay, well, again, we're going to have plenty of time to talk about it, okay? We have 6 more seasons to go through. Try to make it through 6 more seasons without, like, killing me. Just try.
gonna be a long podcast.
Oh, good. Okay. Anyway, thank you guys so much for putting up with us. Please, like I said, comment, share if you can. If you have anything to add, if you have any suggestions, somebody left a suggestion last time. We would appreciate that, too. If there's something you want to hear more of, hear less of, let us know. Thank you for listening. I'm John.
And I'm Ash.
And this is your childhood trauma, and we're out.